Well, on the 15th of October 1987, Michael Fish gave the most well-known and probably the worst ever weather forecast. During a BBC weather bulletin, he said this. Earlier on today, apparently a woman rang the BBC and said, she's heard there's a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, he said, don't worry. There isn't. Having said that, actually the weather will become very windy, but most of the strong winds will be down over Spain and across into France. That evening saw the UK battered by the great storm of 1987, in which 18 people died in winds of up to 122 miles per hour. Around 15 million trees were blown over, blocking roads and toppling onto cars and buildings, and thousands of homes were left without power. The damage bill for the UK was estimated at the time to be around £2 billion. And I remember the occasion very well. On the night of the storm, we were spending our final evening at the church festival in Paignton. And it was a windy night, but nothing that indicated the devastation that it was wreaking around the country. On the way home, our journey was interrupted by fallen trees and debris on the road. And as we turned into the corner of the road where we lived, the house on the end had its roof blown off and what seemed like half of its front wall missing. And we began to wonder, oh dear, what's happened to our house? But thankfully everything was fine. I think the most we experienced was the TV aerial had swung out of place, and that was all. But storms come into our lives in all shapes and sizes, don't they? Sometimes they are literal ones, like the one that Michael Fish so infamously got wrong. And sometimes they can be the storms of illness, storm of death, storm of redundancy or divorce. How should Christians look at those hurricanes that come? How should Christians view those great storms? Well, the text that we are going to be examining today is telling us, well, we should view them not like anyone else views them. John chapter 6, and beginning in verse 6, beginning in verse 16. John 6 and verse 16. It says, when the evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, and they got into a boat, and they started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. And the sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. And when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near to the boat. And they were frightened. And he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." And then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. You see, being a Christian gives us a particular world view. Yes, it's a way of behaving, but Christianity is a way of being. It shapes who we are, and it as a result, it shapes how we see things. You see, Christianity gives us truths that you don't just look at. There's a kind of stagnant, intellectual, dry form of religion that gives us doctrinal truths to look at, but a vibrant and alive Christianity tells you that you're not only supposed to believe those truths, you're supposed to see the world through them. And it gives you a whole new world view. You don't just look at these things, but you look at everything else through them. Now, C.S. Lewis poignantly put it like this. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see the sun rising in the morning, but because by it I see everything else. And when you put Christian truths on like glasses, like your spectacles, They take a very blurry world and they put it into sharp focus. Now, the truth that we're going to be looking at today is that Jesus Christ is the Lord of the storm. And it's important for us not only that we look at that truth, but that we look at the world through that truth. Because there will be enormous storms that come into our lives. And sometimes we thought that the way out of those storms was maybe to escape to a place of safety somewhere. Or maybe the way to escape from those storms is to be raptured up to heaven. But let me tell you, the way to escape those storms through the Lord of the storm. That's the difference between a formal kind of religion and a vibrant form of Christianity. If we look at the world through this truth, we'll never be the same again. Now, what does it mean to say that Jesus is the Lord of the storm? There are three things in this passage that I want us to notice. First of all, it means that Jesus is holy. Jesus is holy. It also means that Jesus is powerful. And it also means that Jesus is our teacher. But first of all, Jesus is holy. If you look carefully, you'll see that the disciples are not terrified until Jesus shows up. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Verse 18, the sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. And when they had rowed for about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near to the boat. And then they were frightened. It doesn't say anywhere that they were terrified of the storm. Now surely they were concerned. And we know from the other gospel accounts that Jesus saw them toiling out there. They couldn't make it in. They were concerned. But there's no talk about them being terrified until Jesus shows up. Why aren't they terrified until he shows up? Well, it's because when he shows up, he's walking on the water. And as he walks on the water, he's showing them that he is in fact from somewhere else. They sense that they're in the presence of the supernatural. They're in the presence of something that is transcendentally above them. They're in the presence of someone from another world. Because they react in terror. And that's the natural response, humanly, to the supernatural. Now what does Jesus do when he shows up? Well, verse 20, he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Actually, that's not what he said. That's the way it's been translated. But literally it says, "Don't be afraid, I am." It's a very unusual grammatical construction. And it's translated, "It is I," because it wouldn't really sound right on our ears. But what he actually is saying is, "Don't be terrified, I am." Now there was another time, wasn't there, when somebody heard a terrifying presence say, "I am." Exodus chapter 3. Moses is standing before the burning bush. And in verse 4, when the Lord saw that, he turned aside to see. And God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here I am." And then he said, "Do not come near, take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." And he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face because he was afraid. Look at God. God tells Moses that he has seen the affliction of the Israelites and that he is going to send him to Pharaoh in order to bring his people out of Egypt. Then in verse 13, Moses says to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'Well, what is his name?' What am I going to say to them?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever. And thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations.'" Now, what does I am mean? Why would God call himself I am? Well, it's because he's saying, I'm not like anything else you've ever seen. I have no beginning and I have no end. There is no I was about me and there is no I will be about me. I am. I need nothing. I am dependent on nothing. I am the unique God. I am self-sufficient. I am the Holy One. That's why God told Moses in verse 5, don't come near, take your sandals off your feet, for the place in which you're standing is holy ground. And in the fury of the fire, Moses heard and grasped the holiness of God, and he hit the deck. And he said, verse 6, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Now, here comes Jesus walking on the water, and in the fury of the water and the storm, he comes to his disciples and he says, I am. And they're terrified and they hit the deck. Why is that? Because he is revealing himself to them. He's revealing himself as the transcendent Holy One, as the one from above, the supernatural God. He's not saying, well, look, chaps, I'm a nice guy. I'm a good sailor. I'm a person that's ever so close to God. No, what he's saying is, I am God. Now, it's important that we understand their response, especially for our dealings with God. Rudolf Otto, at the beginning of the 20th century, wrote a book that was called The Idea of the Holy. And he noted that in all religions, men and women, when they get into the presence of the supernatural, they have an ambivalent reaction. It's an approach and an avoidance reaction. It means on the one hand there is a great attraction, and on the other hand there's a repulsion. On the one hand they're attracted, but on the other hand they're terrified. Otto calls it a numinous awe. The approach and the avoidance is, I want to be near the supernatural. I want this. I want to be near God. But I'm afraid and I'm terrified of being near God. And the Israelites agreed to be God's treasured possession, a holy nation, a kingdom of priests and kings, to enter into a covenant relationship with God. And yet at Mount Sinai, when they saw the thunder and when they saw the flashings of lightning, the sound of the trumpet, the mountain shaking, they were afraid and they trembled and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, you go. We're going to stand way over here. You see, Isaiah, who wants to know God, he wants to see God. And yet at the same time, when he comes into the presence of God, he says, woe is me, for I am undone. He sees the holy God, and his conclusion is, I am a man of unclean lips. I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. You have Peter, who's been out fishing all night, and Jesus comes into the boat and he says, look, put your net over here. And he brings up enough fish that it's beginning to sink the boat. Another supernatural feat. Another piece of evidence of who Jesus is. And what does Peter do? What does Peter say? Wouldn't you think, as a fisherman, when he sees this boat full of fish, you'd think he'd say, wow, this Jesus is great. I can't believe it. I'm in with this. I don't have to go fishing again for another month. This is brilliant. But what does he say? Depart from me. I'm a sinful man. He doesn't see the fish. He's experienced this numinous awe. He's in the presence of the Holy. Now, why does humanity have this approach and this avoidance reaction? Well, it really goes back to creation in the Garden of Eden. God built us for the garden. He built us to walk with him in the cool of the day. That means our souls are built to relate to God. It's like a moth being attracted to the light. It's the way that a bee is attracted to a flower. It's the way a beached whale is attracted to the water. It's the way that our stomachs, when hungry, are attracted to food. That's the way we're made. That's the way we're wired. We long to be in the presence of God because that's why we've been made. That's how we've been created, in God's image, for a relationship with him. But you see, when humanity sinned, when we decided that we want to live independently from God, we decided to live by and for ourselves. And because we decided to live in that way, we've become traumatized by the holy. And here's why. Because we've decided we're going to be our own creators. We've decided we're going to be our own gods. But you see, whenever we get near now to the holy, yes, it is gorgeous, but it's also traumatic. We can't live with God and we can't live without God. And we see this thing on a human level, don't we? The more beautiful, the more talented, the more gifted, the more powerful, the more influential people. The people that seem to be so perfect and got their lives together. Yes, we want to be near them. We want to be around those sort of people. And yet at the same time, we don't really like them because of that situation. But you know, it's really worse with God. Why do you think there are so many people on the one hand that seek God, and yet whenever they get near to him, they're scared? It's often because they're thinking, if I give myself to this God, will he come through for me? Maybe he'll ask me to do something that I don't want to do. Maybe it will be embarrassing for me if I get too close to this God. On the one hand, there's this desire, there's this wanting, there's this yearning for God. But on the other, they want to keep control of their lives. And so humanly we're trapped, aren't we, in the snare of our own making. We want God on the one hand, and yet on the other hand we can't have him. We can't give up control so that we can have him. Now here's the solution. We need to see that the one that we need in the boat to take us to shore is a holy person. And he wants us to give up control of our lives. You see, a truly loving person wants to see you grow, wants to see you flourish and change. But Jesus, just to want you to stay as you are, isn't really showing us real love. His holy love will intervene. It will confront. It won't allow us to stay just as we are. Jesus will say, these things have to change. You need to give up control of your life. And that's the reason why so many are afraid to let Jesus into their boat. There's an innate desire in human beings to want God, but our fallen human nature presses us to say, but how can I keep control of my life? And the answer is, you can't. Jesus, the Holy One, won't let us. He loves us too much for that to happen. Now, the second thing we learn from this passage is that Jesus is powerful. Jesus is coming to us and saying, I am the Lord of this storm. Now, notice what we're told about the Lord God in Psalm 29. Psalm 29, and beginning in verse 1. The psalmist says, ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength, ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord over many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon to skip like a calf. And Siron to skip like a wild ox. The voice of the Lord flashes forth flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. Verse 9, the voice of the Lord makes the deer give birth and strips the forest bare and in his temple all quiet glory. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord sits enthroned as king forever. May the Lord give strength to his people. May the Lord bless his people with peace. You see what the psalmist is telling us? The God of glory thunders. The voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. The voice of the Lord twists the oak, strips the forest bare. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood as king forever. The Lord is powerful. And Jesus comes along and says, I am that God. When you hear the thunder, thunder is powerful. But it's a power that's on loan from me. The storm that breaks over the waters is powerful, but it's a power on loan from me. Nothing in nature has power except that it's a power on loan from me, says Jesus. And so he says, what's a hurricane to me? It's a bit like a summer breeze, that on a hot day you just hope that there is a little bit of breeze. A hurricane to Jesus, that's all it is. Jesus has power over the forces of nature. But he doesn't only have power over the external universe, he has power over the internal universe. Because these people are scared. They're experiencing probably the greatest trauma you can experience. As they get into the presence of the holy, they sense their own vulnerability, they sense their own creatureliness. They sense their smallness. They sense their weakness. Now, what does he do to the storm that's raging inside of them? What does he say? Well, John 6 and verse 20, he says, don't be afraid. I am. And then in verse 21, they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were looking. A word from Jesus, that's all it took. He can reveal himself to you in such a way that it can deal with the storm that's raging inside as well as the storm that's going on outside. Jesus is saying it doesn't matter how tangled things are. It doesn't matter how turbulent things are. It doesn't matter how stormy it gets. When you have your life in me, when you realize that I am the Lord of the storm, and you surrender control to me, I can bring peace out of the chaos. I can bring calmness out of fear. Beauty where there's only ugliness. I wonder, do you look at your life sometimes and, or maybe even someone else's life and say, well, it's too tangled. It's too much of a mess. It's too chaotic. It's too ugly. The storm is too great. And there's nothing. Fear. Well, Jesus is saying, there is nothing that's too great for me. Nothing. I am the Lord over all the disorder, over all of the turbulence, all of the chaos, all of the fear, because I am the Lord of the storm. Not only those of the external universe, but the internal one. Me, Jesus says. Take me into your boat, because I'm the God of power. And when the disciples did that, the boat made it to the other side. We want to get through the storm. We've got to have Jesus in the boat. The only way we're going to be safe. But then third, what we see from this passage is that Jesus is our teacher. The fact that Jesus is Lord of the storm tells us he's holy. It tells us he's powerful. But it also tells us that he allows his people to go through storms for a purpose. Notice over in Mark chapter 6, this is Mark's account of the same incident. Mark 6, beginning in verse 45. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up to the mountain to pray. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. Now, there's a couple of very interesting snippets in Mark's account. First of all, he makes it pretty clear that Jesus knew that they were going into a storm. In fact, he sends them into the storm. He makes them get into the boat, is what the account says. And second, Jesus saw that they were getting into trouble on the sea. You see, never think that Jesus isn't aware of our situation. You know, sometimes we think we're going through all kinds of things, and where's Jesus? Doesn't he know what's happening in my life? Doesn't he know what I'm going through, what I'm experiencing? He's always aware. He's always there. Never think that Jesus isn't aware of our situation. You know, this is quite a contrast, because in the early part of the chapter that we looked at last week, you have Jesus filling the disciples at a feast, and now he's sending them into a place of danger, in where they're going to feel frail, a place where they're going to look as if they're totally bereft of his presence. And if Jesus is your saviour, there will be times when he's apparently sending you into danger and into places where he appears to be absent. But don't be startled. He is our teacher. He knows what he is doing, and his eye is always on us. But don't be surprised or shocked if storms come into our life. But I want you to see how he helps us deal with those storms. See, here they are, they're scared, and he's walking on the water. Now, he doesn't say, look, don't be afraid, I've heard Michael Fish. Soon going to be over. It's not really going to be that serious. See, some of us deal with our storms that way, don't we? We say to ourselves, well, look, don't worry, it's not that bad. It's soon going to be over. It will soon pass. Every cloud has a silver lining. Don't worry, it will soon be gone. But to say that to someone who's in the middle of the storm is pretty cold comfort, because they're right there in the middle of it, experiencing it. See, Jesus never minimizes the storm, but what he does is he maximizes himself. He maximizes himself. He doesn't say, look, take heart, the storm really isn't that bad. It's not as bad as you think. Actually, there's a shallow area over there. We're not that far away from it. Instead, what does he say? He says, take heart. Don't be afraid. I am. When we're going through a storm, what he wants us to see is who he is. The great I am. He wants us to see that he is the Lord of the storm. That's how we can deal with the storms that we experience in our life. Did you realize how often Christians have idols in their lives? And an idol, of course, is anything that we put in front of God. It's really a way of us keeping control of our own lives. We worship it, we bow down to it. It's something that we center our lives on. We build our lives upon it. And we get our meaning and our self-worth and our security out of those idols. But if we just change the metaphor for a moment, instead of thinking of those things as idols, why don't we think of them as life rafts? A life raft is a great thing because on it you're in charge. If you're on a ship, well, you're probably going to have to serve. You're probably going to have to be a sailor. You're going to have to do some work. You're going to have to work for the captain of the ship. So us human beings like the life rafts because we build them ourselves. They're the things that we build into our lives, that we base our lives upon, and on those life rafts we're the ones in charge. Now, Jesus sends the storms into our lives to show us the inadequacy of those life rafts so that we would climb aboard him. Just notice how often that's exactly what storms do. In the book of Job, Satan comes to God and says, have you seen Job? I want you to look at him for a moment. He says he's your servant. I say he's using you. He's not serving you. He's using you to serve him. He's manipulating you. What's his real foundation? What's holding him up in the waters of life? Well, if you look carefully, God, it's his wealth. It's his popularity. Those are really the things that he worships. Those are the things that are holding him up. Get rid of those things, God, and he will curse you to your face. And if you look at the story, what happens is God allows the storms to come into his life. A storm that actually knocks down his house, knocks down his family, down his livestock, destroys all of his wealth. And although Job struggles tremendously, in the end, he climbs upon the Lord. And he says, "All right, Lord, it is you that I live for. It is your word that I live for. It is your riches that I live for." And as a result, he becomes a stable person because he climbs aboard something that cannot sink. Just think of the parable of the men that build two houses. One house is built on sand and the other is built on rock. How do you know what your real foundation is? Well, Jesus says you'll know what your foundation is when the storms come. A storm comes and one of them falls flat and the other doesn't. You see, if you build your life on the factor of being beautiful, the storm of aging will come. If you build your life on your career, then the storm of the recession will come. If you build your life on true love, then the storm of rejection will come. The storm of singleness. The storm of having no one ask you out on a date. Don't you see? Those storms show your foundation. Those storms show your life rafts. Those storms show up what you're really relying on to hold you up. And why does Jesus send those storms into your life? Because he doesn't want you to be an unstable person. He doesn't want you to be dashed around by every wind, whichever way it's blowing. He says, climb onto me. Of course, it means you're not going to be in charge of your own life. You can't be the captain of your own life raft. But if you come onto me, I'll be your captain. And don't be afraid, because on me you will be safe. Build your life upon me. And whatever else is going on in the world around you, I, the great I am, the Lord God Almighty, will keep you safe. You see, if you want Jesus to be your teacher, you have to expect storms to come into your life. And you have to see the purpose in those storms. And the purpose is to get you to grasp that he is God, that he is in control, that he is powerful, that he is the one that will see you through them. No one else. Nothing else. Only him. That's how he helped the disciples deal with their storm. And that's how he will help us deal with the storms that come into our life. Now, one last thing. You have to realize that he will handle every storm differently. In a previous storm the disciples were in, Jesus got up and he just said, "Peace, be still." That was it. And sometimes we have storms in our life and occasionally Jesus will say, "Peace, be still," and the problem will be gone. But in the case of John chapter 6, Jesus keeps the storm there. The storm doesn't subside. And he shows his power above the storm. And even though we're not told about it in John's account, Matthew records that Peter actually gets out of the boat. And as long as he keeps his eyes on Jesus, he's able to walk on the water too. Which means that Jesus' power over the storm is transferred to Peter. As long as Peter keeps his eyes on Jesus. That's the way. Take your eyes off Jesus and you'll sink. Keep your eyes on Jesus and you rise above the storm. Now what does all of that mean? Well, it means sometimes that Jesus gets rid of the storms in our lives. And sometimes he says, "I'm not going to get rid of this storm. I'm going to raise you above the storm. The storm will still be there, but I'm going to raise your level of maturity to meet the storm and to rise above it." I'm going to show you how you're going to walk through the storm. I'm going to show you how you're going to walk over the storm. But I'm not actually going to remove the storm from you. Jesus uses different approaches to different storms, to different circumstances, for different people. Because he deals with us individually. He deals with us relationally. And he knows what's best for each one of us because he's developing a relationship with us. And sometimes we need Jesus just to wake us up, to show us who he is. And other times we need Jesus just to comfort us and to calm us and to put his arms around us and embrace us. He is holy. He is powerful, but he is also our teacher. He's out to make us who we can truly be. And that is to be like him. To be conformed to his image. And for that to happen, we need to surrender the control of our lives and put ourselves into his hands and into the way that he does things. When storms strike, and they will strike in one form or another. The worst thing that you can do is go downstairs and go to sleep. You have to hold on to the rudder. You have to hold on to the steering wheel. And when the storm is over, you'll find that if you have held on to the rudder, the wind will have taken us closer to our destination than we would have ever been able to achieve if the storm hadn't been there. And what's more, you'll find that Jesus, the great I Am, was there with you all along, holding the rudder with you, making sure that you wouldn't let go, holding you in his presence. So trust him, rely on him. He is your teacher. He is powerful. He is the holy I Am. So don't give up. Whatever storm you're going through, whatever storm you're experiencing, don't surrender, because Jesus is the Lord of the storms.